Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the VisionVest Live Conference Call Series. Your host for today is Mr. Arnold Mitchell. Please go ahead, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, operator, and also thank you to our listeners as well. Today is Wednesday, February the 11th, 2015. Good afternoon and welcome to our VisionVest Live Dial and Discover Conference Call Series, your backstage pass into the minds of the money managers. My name is Arnold Mitchell, and I'll be your host today, and this call will be providing you with both some historical market commentary and economic commentary just on the last quarter, and some thoughts from one of the management firms within the Harmony Fund platform. Please note that this call is being recorded, and there'll be a playback available on our website if you need to rehear it or if you want to forward it on to a friend. So the last quarter of 2014 presented some interesting items. The Canadian equity market, as measured by the S&P-TSX index, declined. It returned a negative 1.47%. And that was in spite of Canada's gross domestic product, our economy growing, in fact, growing a little bit more than we expected. The GDP grew by 0.8% in the third quarter of 2014, and that was a bit better than expected. The big surprise, I think, for everyone was that during that quarter, interest rates actually fell. Interest rates, as measured by the Canadian Treasury yield, declined by 31 basis points. They began the quarter at 2.12 and closed it out in December at 1.81. So we didn't think interest rates could go low any lower, and they did. On the U.S. side, U.S. equity, and we'll hear more about the U.S. from our manager shortly, but on the U.S. equity market side, in the fourth quarter, the S&P index returned 8.75%. Now, that was in Canadian dollar-denominated terms, which I'll touch on a bit more later, but just a whopping great return in the final quarter of the year. The U.S. saw their real gross domestic product grow at an annual rate of 5%, which was just a very good annual growth rate, one of the reasons that the returns were so good. Another reason that the returns were so good, job growth improved at a very strong pace. They saw an average of 278,000 jobs added every month during the 3 months ending November, and that meant that the unemployment rate declined to 5.8% in November. Overseas markets were mixed, and in fact, the broad MSCI EAFE index, that's an index of sort of around the globe, basically was pretty much flat. It was minus 0.06%. Now, we talked about currency a minute ago, and I said the U.S. equity markets returned 8.75%. Now, that was to us here in Canada. To a U.S. person in U.S. dollars, it was only 4.93% it went up. So, in other words, there was a difference of almost 4%, 3.82, that was due strictly due to the rise in the U.S. dollar, or in other words, the decline in the Canadian dollar. And that actually held true with just about every market around the globe against those currencies. The Canadian dollar fell, maybe not quite as much as that 3.82, but all in the 3 to 4% range. So what that meant was our portfolios being positioned significantly outside of Canada had a tendency to outperform in the last quarter. Again, we talked about interest rates a little bit. With the exception of Greece, most rates fell during the fourth quarter of 2014, and most notably the UK, Germany, and France, where rates fell by 0.5 to 0.6%, so significant declines. Due to the uncertainty in Greece, going back and forth, basically the interest rates there rose from 6.6% up to 9.7%. So you look at a 9.7% Greece interest rate and a Canadian interest rate of 1.8%. There's a huge differential there. But in the developed nations, basically lower interest rates, and in the more riskier nations, higher interest rates. Now, what did that mean to our portfolios, to your portfolios? And I'll just look at two examples. An investor in a somewhat conservative balanced portfolio, the Harmony Balanced Portfolio Embedded Series, for the quarter, last quarter, made 1.3%, and that rounded out the year. At the end of the year, they were up 7.1%. a little bit more growth-oriented investor, someone who's invested in the Harmony Growth Portfolio Embedded Series, earned 0.1% more in the quarter. Their portfolio grew by 1.4% for the quarter, and what that meant was 7.7% for the year. So a decent year for them. So that was what happened. What do we see going forward? Well, I just want to read two quotes to you. We asked some of the managers that we're using what key factors would be the catalyst for global economic growth over the next 12 months. And I'll just quote two of the managers, one C.S. McKee, who are also U.S. equity managers. And what their response was that falling energy prices will stimulate consumption and add to economic growth. And the biggest potential upside could be an emergence of the Chinese consumer after the crackdown on corruption in China. So their viewpoint is we're going to have lots of economic growth, and there may even be a nice positive upside as well, even beyond that. We also asked a bond manager, Baker Gilmore, and bond managers tend to be a bit more conservative, so their opinions, I kind of like to hear them a little bit better at times. We asked them the same question, and their response was, in 2015, we expect the global economy to grow at one of the strongest paces of recent years, boosted by falling oil prices, a much reduced level in some cases, a full reversal of fiscal drag and the ongoing level of unprecedented money stimulus. So that's an outfit that typically would tend to be a bit more bearish, being very, very positive. So bodes well for markets going forward. So what do we sort of see big picture? Well, a few thematic observations that we have. We expect the fixed income markets will continue to exhibit heightened levels of rate volatility. We expect muted global economic growth. We don't think it's going to get way better around the globe due to pressure on crude oil prices, and the downward pressure on crude oil prices will be a drag on the Canadian economy. However, we've got an optimistic near-term outlook for the U.S. and an expectation that the U.S. dollar will continue to exhibit strength. We believe that the European Central Bank is going to take additional actions to improve the pace of economic growth. That bodes well for equity markets. And that Japanese equities look attractive as Prime Minister Abe just continues to implement some unconventional monetary policies to improve the Japanese economy. And finally, and this is a bit of a flip-flop for me, real estate should actually maybe continue to perform well because of these lower interest rates. I've been a little bit nervous about real estate up until now, but with rates continuing to decline, especially real estate in the commercial and apartment sectors should do well. So what are we doing to your portfolios due to those themes? Well, due to the positive outlook in the U.S., we're maintaining broad U.S. exposure and, in fact, increasing exposure to some of the small cap stocks. And on the fixed income side, we're maintaining shorter than benchmark durations, basically shorter bonds that aren't for as long a time period, and maintaining slightly overweight positions in investment-grade corporates, high yields, floating rates relative to the normal index. And also, given the strength of the U.S. dollar relative to the Canadian dollar, we're also doing a little bit unhedging some ETFs to just get some of the foreign exchange returns in there. So today our special guest is Tony Genoa. Tony has been a portfolio manager of AGF's U.S. growth portfolio since he joined AGF in 2005. Throughout his more than 30-year career in portfolio management, Tony has remained committed to his proven investment strategy that identifies leading growth companies in every cycle. His portfolio management experience includes retail mutual funds, sub-advisory platforms, and institutional portfolios. His direct experience as a portfolio manager is complemented by the 3 years he spent as a market strategist on Wall Street. Tony's also a member of the AGF Asset Allocation Committee, which is comprised of senior portfolio managers who are responsible for various regions and asset classes. They meet formally quarterly to discuss, analyze, and assess the macroeconomic environment and capital markets in order to determine optimal asset allocation recommendations. Welcome, Tony. Thanks for being our guest today.
Good to be on the call, Arnold. Thank you.
Just appreciate you taking the time out of your day. Before we get started, Tony, can you just tell my listeners a little bit? I mean, I know I gave your bio there, but tell us a little bit just about what specifically your role at AGF is and your just overall philosophy about investing, how you go about determining the investments that you guys make.
Sure, Arnold. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a portfolio manager here at AGF. I'm a senior vice president, and I'm responsible for the flagship portfolio, or at least account. AGF is named after the American Growth Fund. This fund is the first mutual fund offered to Canadians, investing solely in the U.S. From the late 50s. And so it's been around for quite some time. I also manage some other accounts because I've not only invested in the U.S. market during the course of my career, but also in the international market. So I do have a global portfolio, a small one that I manage, as well as a small cap portfolio. As you mentioned during your introductory comments with respect to my profile here, I am a vice chair of the AGF Asset Allocation Committee, and we have a considerable amount of experience on this committee where we're always looking for opportunities to add value to client portfolios by the selection of the geographic allocation, which can be very key since you had mentioned, Arnold, how you can get divergence in performance either from markets, from asset categories, and even from currency. My philosophy in investing the funds that I invest on behalf of clients is one of capturing the market leaders in every cycle. And when I look at market leaders from cycle to cycle, what I've observed is that they are seldomly the same from cycle to cycle. And there's two reasons why they change. One has to do with innovation that results in new products and new services that are introduced into the marketplace, and to the extent that these are successful products and services, they will be purchased by customers. That results in growth for the underlying companies I invest in, and that gets rewarded in the marketplace. And so innovation plays a very important role that lends itself to leadership in each cycle. Now, leadership does change, and the second reason why it changes, besides innovation, has to do with the macroeconomic environment. And this is always changing. And this leads also to opportunities. Maybe this is best described by an example. Between 02 and into 07 and into 08, we saw a tremendous rise in commodity prices, and the Canadian market did well on the back of resources doing quite well. So I'm always on the lookout for the changing landscape when it comes to the macroeconomic environment, as well as innovation that results in new products and services. I've been at this for 3 decades plus, and I'm still excited about uncovering opportunities to make money for you, Arnold, and your clients.
Well, love to hear that. That's what we want. That's what we want. So now, most of our listeners here are part of the AGF platform, the Harmony platform. And so, for Harmony, you're managing specifically the large cap growth portion of that portfolio. And if I understand it, it's that you manage specifically about 14% of that portfolio.
That's correct. It's about 14.5% currently of the pool, as represented, as you mentioned, by the U.S. large cap mandate.
Okay. And so, are you excited about large caps? Let me back up. Really, is it too late to buy U.S. stocks? I mean, we've seen this huge run up in the past year. Well, not just the past year, the past bunch of years. We've seen just really great returns out of the U.S., part of that currency, but part of that just the phenomenal returns in U.S. markets. Is it too late?
No, it's not too late. And yes, I am excited about the U.S. large cap. It's my largest personal holding. It's my wife's largest holding. And while the market has moved up, we think that there's further upside ahead. The U.S. market, as you well know, is very close to its all-time highs, and it's enjoyed a number of solid years in a row of returns, but we think that there's still more upside. Now, my posture has been and continues to be that U.S. stocks are in a healthy uptrend. In March of this year, we will celebrate the sixth anniversary of the bull market or the underlying uptrend, since the market did drop out in March of 2009, and there's more upside left. Let me tell you about the reasons why I think there's upside left. Number one has to do with corporate profits. Corporate profits are in terrific shape. When it comes to earnings of U.S. companies, what we're seeing as we're now well through the reporting season is that some 73% of U.S. companies are exceeding consensus estimates. Now, when it comes to these estimates, you know, perhaps they were a little too low, but it's always a healthy development when companies exceed expectation when it comes to corporate profits. And if you had to just look at one variable in terms of the stock market over a very long period of time that is the most correlated with the underlying direction of the market, that would have to be earnings. So as earnings go up, so does the market. The second reason that the U.S. is in very good standing for further upside has to do with the U.S. economy, which has been quite resilient. You mentioned in your introductory comments how the third quarter was 5% real GDP growth, and even into the fourth quarter, it did slow down, but still a quite healthy growth rate of 2.6%. When one considers that the global economy is slowing down, whether it's coming from lackluster growth in Europe or China slowing down, the U.S. Has been a bright spot on the world stage when it comes to economic growth. Employment growth continues to make headway. You mentioned some of the figures earlier, and this in turn is leading to greater confidence by the consumer, and this then translates into a good retail environment and good consumer spending, whether it's for goods in the retail channel or for autos and even for housing, which is enjoying a recovery. Now, we should consider that besides employment growth, U.S. consumers are benefiting from lower oil prices through the gasoline pump, and that also is a benefit. The third reason why the market can go higher has to do with corporate balance sheets. They are in terrific shape. Tremendous amount of cash is on U.S. corporate balance sheets, which lends itself to shareholder-friendly activities such as buybacks as well as increased dividends. And let's not forget that companies do reinvest in their businesses through capital expenditures, allowing for future growth opportunities. Now, the market is not without risk. There's always some volatility in the market for a number of factors. I think as we get through the year and there's talk that's well publicized of the U.S. Federal Reserve increasing rates, and that could cause a hiccup in the stock market, but I don't think it's going to derail the underlying uptrend. And to the extent that we do get a pullback, I would say that that would be a buying opportunity, because an increase in rates would confirm that the U.S. economy is in good standing. And if the U.S. economy is in good standing, corporate profits will continue their upward march. So I remain dedicated to the U.S. market, that it's in an uptrend, and I think that you can enjoy the ride.
Well, so, Tony, let me ask you something. You mentioned corporate balance sheets a minute ago, and but if you look at, let's say, the U.S., not corporate, but government balance sheet, they keep adding to the liability side of the ledger. I mean, you know, their debt just is skyrocketing. What do you say to somebody? I got this call actually from a client yesterday, worried that the U.S. economy is headed for bankruptcy because they just keep on borrowing more money. You know, what do you say to that? That the U.S. is near bankruptcy.
Well, I would say that, you know, there's always people that are going to be concerned from one factor or another. But what we have to do is examine imbalances. And there was an imbalance a number of years ago with consumer debt related to the housing market. But that's corrected because we've seen U.S. Consumer pay down their debt. When it comes to corporate debt, that's not really a problem because of tremendous cash flow coming from earnings. Now, when it comes to the U.S. Government, they did run up the budget deficit, and at the worst of it, it was more than 10% of U.S. Global U.S. GMP. And so it's improved materially from that level. Now, I think that this was good spending, because to the extent that the U.S. Was spending money on programs to get the economy back into a healthy trajectory, then it's good to run a deficit. And that deficit has come down materially. So it's come down from some 10% plus of GDP down to less than 3%. Now, that's still a deficit, and debt has still accumulated for the U.S. economy. But compared to other economies around the world, if I look at federal debt as a percentage of total GDP, it's around 100%. But held by the public, it's only in the 70s. And vis-a-vis other countries in the world, that's a very low level. But I don't blame that investors are always concerned about a collapse. After all, in the last 15 years, we had two bubbles bursting. We had the housing bubble burst. We had the technology bubble bursting in 2000. And so these are still fresh in investors' minds that perhaps there's something else that's going to burst. But as I suggested a moment ago, I don't see any imbalances that are leading me to believe that there's another bubble that's about to burst.
Appreciate that. You know, actually, I'll interject my own comment on that. I did the math, I think it was last year, on the per capita, what the government debt was on a per capita basis in the U.S., and what I found was kind of interesting. I'm not sure if you remember this time or not, but back in the 80s here in Canada, we had the debt clock, and we were very focused on our deficit and our debt at that time. And when I did the math, what I found was that on an inflation-adjusted basis, the per capita debt was similar, almost identical, actually, to what ours was here in Canada in the 80s. And if you recall, I mean, during that time, we ended up raising taxes and doing a few things that were a bit painful, but we got out of that big debt problem, and we managed to get through it. My viewpoint is the U.S. still managed to get out of it. But, yeah, it's never good to be way in debt.
Well, you know, we did have a bad recession through the 90s to correct that imbalance. And what I would say, Arnold, that's been the equivalent in the U.S. Is that we've had a below-average recovery that's allowed for these imbalances to restore themselves to more normalcy. And so we didn't have the bad recession, we did a bad recession in after the global financial crisis, but the recovery being subpar, I would suggest, is what corrected that imbalance.
Right. So looking forward, we got 2015, we're in it, 2015, 2016. What do you see benefiting the U.S.? What opportunities are you seeing? Can you tell us a couple of great stock stories you've got there?
Sure. So as we go through this year, Arnold, and through 2016, what I'm expecting is a somewhat of a reversal of what we saw last year. Last year, investors were very concerned with the global economy, including the U.S. economy. And so the sectors that did well last year were more defensive sectors. Healthcare did well, and utilities. Of the 10 sectors that make up the market, those were the best performing sectors because of the stability and also the drive for people looking for yield for a to be a bond substitute since bond yields are very low levels. This uncertain environment came from the slowing global economy, and I think as people feel more comfortable that the slowing economy doesn't necessarily spell a recession, but simply slow growth, that they can return to growth. And when it comes to growth, I'm very much excited about the beneficiaries of certain sectors and industry and individual companies that are going to benefit from that. For example, in the portfolio, one of our largest holdings is Robert Half. Robert Half is a temporary help company that is benefiting from employment growth. And what we've seen is that temporary help is gaining share of total employment, and that's helping that company in particular. When it comes to technology and the internet and leveraging models that are emerging that are relatively new, we have participation in Facebook as a social media company. It's totally amazing that their user base is more than any single country in the world. They have more users than there are people in China, and they're able to monetize on that. Another internet-related company that's benefiting from tremendous growth that's in the portfolio is Amazon. You know, Amazon was somewhat challenged last year because they were unable to bring their significant growth down to the bottom line as they're reinvesting in their business. But finally, they're turning a very good profit and exceeded expectations as they reported their fourth quarter numbers. And so Amazon is in the portfolio. So I'm always looking for those companies, those industries, those sectors that are gaining share of the global wallet or consumer wallet, or even the opportunity within particular segment. Another example that's in the portfolio is Harman International. What Harman does is infotainment system for automobiles. They also have consumer audio and visual products, but mostly audio. And we know that with the connected car, with people getting in their car, with the GPS, with their phone, with the systems that are increasingly being integrated into cars, that they are a very good way to participate in the connected car and infotainment trend that's grabbing more share of the automobile industry. So these are some examples of companies that we have in the portfolio that are dynamic, that are resulting in success from innovation through new products and services, and they're capitalizing on that. And we feel very comfortable that while some of these companies have gone up, that there's still plenty of runway ahead for further appreciation.
Well, thank you very much, Tony. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with me and my listeners today.
It was great to be on the call, Arnold.
Well, thank you. To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our call today. If there's something you'd like to discuss with me personally, please give my office a shout at 604-542-2818. If there's something you missed in the call or need to hear again, or if you know someone who couldn't listen in live but may still want to hear the call, a playback will be available shortly on our website at visionvest.ca. If you received an invitation to us to this call by email, you will be sent playback details shortly. Or alternately, you can call our office for a playback phone number and passcode. Our next call is scheduled for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015 at 1 p.m. Invitation and details will be sent out to you closer to the date as long as we have your contact information on file. This has been a VisionVest Live Dial and Discover conference call brought to you by Arnold Machel, VisionVest Financial Planning and Services, and IPC Investment Corporation. As usual, any returns quoted assume funds are held for the entire period with all dividends reinvested. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Thanks again for listening.